Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Puck, the podcast. Tom Callahan, Jay Levin here with you as we are getting ready to talk, as always, hockey, but the playoff race has come down to the nitty-gritty now. We're in the last 5-6 games of the season for a lot of teams, depending on how their schedule plays out. Jay and I are going to go into this. Also, I have an argument to make in the second half of the show on behalf of Jordan Binnington. We will get to that a little bit later. But as always, I welcome in my co-host. He is at Bowtie Sports on Twitter, Jay Levin. Jay, how are you?
Doing well, Tom. Looking forward to a massive game in the Eastern Conference tonight. That Montreal-Columbus game. I mean, as you were referencing, getting down to the playoffs. Eastern Conference. I mean, it looks like the top six teams, top three in each division. And it looks like the wild card is pretty much down to three teams for two spots. That Montreal-Columbus game, I mean, massively important for determining the wild card race there. And then tomorrow night, we've got a huge matchup in the Western Conference, of course, when Arizona visits Colorado and Minnesota travels to Vegas. But similar situation in the West, where the top three are fairly well positioned in both divisions and the battles for the wild card positions. Although I think a couple more teams still potentially hanging on the fringe of the periphery there in the West. The East, it really looks like three teams, two positions, and that game tonight will go a long way towards determining how the final four games or so play out.
Boy, you talk about the most interesting thing in hockey for me, speaking of, as you mentioned, tonight's game, Montreal and Columbus, the Blue Jackets may legitimately go from deadline contender and pushing the chips all in to complete and total summer rebuild. If they don't make the playoffs, there's no way you could sell Panarin or Bobrovsky on changing their mind and trying to stick around. Plus, you went out and got all these guys who now you've got to sell them on the idea of this this program that you went for it, and it did not make it. And part of me wonders, Jay, if they made so many changes that it changed a bit of the room or maybe just the chemistry on the ice. I don't know, but I do know that Columbus has not been a better team since the deadline.
No, they haven't. A lot of guys who they were banking on, who had been on the roster before, have struggled the last month and a half. Their first line has kind of gone cold a little bit. They've had some injuries on the back end, but I'll throw it on the goalie. I mean, I'm not a huge Bobrovsky fan. He's put up some really good regular season numbers, but when it comes down to must-win games, when it comes to the playoffs, when it comes to must-win games, his performance and his record has been very average. And when you're paying him that much and you're giving him that type of responsibility for him to only be average, makes it tough for a team to fully contend. But again, he's not the only one. I mean, the top line has gone a little cold for them as well. And you wonder how chemistry issues maybe play into that when you do talk about the type of moves that they made. I'm a fan of that coaching staff. I'm a fan of a lot of the base that they've got on that blue line, but it's a huge final stretch for them. I don't know that there's anything they can do to convince Panarin to come back. It sounds like his mind is made up that he's gone. Bobrovsky, you don't know what the market is for him, and I'd contend that perhaps they're better off if he does go, and if they fill that with a more stable goaltender, perhaps one that comes with a little bit better cap certainty for them. And all the guys that they brought in at the deadline, those are good questions to see where they fit in long term.
That, and I think Bob's also driving his own price down with his performance here a little bit down the stretch, but that's another matter entirely. All right, let's shoot over to the West real quick here, Jay. I'm ready to write off Minnesota. 3 wins in their last 10 games. They have 5 left. They sit, as of our taping here, 4 points out from Colorado. Minnesota has 79. Colorado's got 83. Arizona's got 81. I think the West is set. I don't see the Coyotes really necessarily catching up to Colorado. I think the injuries are just too much for Arizona to overcome. They could. Sure, they could. All of those teams, Dallas, Colorado, Arizona, Minnesota, all have 5 games left. But I just, first of all, I can't see a world where Minnesota makes it. And Arizona would have to really pick up their level of play. Meanwhile, Colorado, to their credit, is actually playing better as of late.
You know, I tend to agree with the way you see things playing out, but I mean, that's a really big game between Arizona, Colorado tomorrow. I mean, if Arizona wins that one in regulation, you know, you're looking at a much different picture, you know, going into the final 4 games. Minnesota does have some work to do, but, you know, again, if Minnesota runs the table there, gets to 89 points, you know, with some of the matchups that are going on or they will play out over the next couple of days, they've got a chance. But I think Minnesota pretty much has to run the table. I think last night probably, you know, eliminated Chicago and Edmonton for all legitimate intents and purposes. You know, both Dallas and Colorado winning, picking up 2 points. I think that just meant, you know, too much has to go in either Chicago or Edmonton's way to, you know, for either of them to get in. Both still mathematically in it, but just the permutations of wins and losses around them, I think is too much to kind of ask for. You know, Dallas, Colorado most likely get in, especially if Colorado wins tomorrow night. But, you know, you need to see them finish up strong in order to get there. You know, and that there is still an outside chance that Dallas can get into the top 3 in the Central Division. But I'm leaning towards where you're leaning. If we talk on Monday, you know, I might be ready to push all the chips in there. But as you were talking about the Western Conference, you know, a player who you mentioned at the beginning here has really changed the focus of the Western Conference playoffs. I mean, St. Louis was kind of stuffling along. I'm still not fully sold on them as a team, not fully sold on their skaters, but the goaltending that they're getting there has massively changed the Western Conference dynamic.
I first of all, I'm going to throw this out there. This is the first time we're going to hear this. Bob to Edmonton this summer. They're going to overpay for him, and because goaltending has always been the issue with Edmonton, they're going to overpay for him, and he's going to end up there. So I'm just throwing that out there now. Second of all, with St. Louis, I am going to go ahead and say, at the very least, the Blues end up in a home ice position in the first round of the playoffs. They're going to finish either first or second in the Central. And that's a bold prediction. But I just feel like the Blues have put it together at the right time. I like the way they're built heading into the playoffs. In that division, I mean, Winnipeg and Nashville are still strong teams. Dallas could be scary, depending on Ben Bishop. And I think everything goes through Ben Bishop. But you could say the same for St. Louis. So let's take a quick break here. Jay and I will come back. We'll talk a little bit more about what's going on here in the Western Conference, the St. Louis Blues, and I'm going to make the case for Jordan Binnington, Rookie of the Year. We'll be right back with more Talking Puck. Welcome back here on Talking Puck, the podcast. Tom Callahan here with you. I'm at Callahan on air on Twitter. Jay Levin at Bowtie Sports. You can follow us both over there and the blog at talkingpuck.com. And certainly you can Also, subscribe to the podcast if you enjoy what we have to say about it. Certainly, you can give us a like and comment below the post on TalkingPuck.com, but you can also follow us on iTunes as well. All right, so I wanted to go back to the Western Conference here, Jay. And one thing that I think happened already this year, I think the media at large, and I'm not going to say anybody specifically, especially for someone like me who used to be a part of that media, I guess. I'm going to go ahead and say that they went and handed Elias Pettersson to the Canucks Rookie of the Year, probably sometime around Christmas, maybe January. And he has really, really good numbers, especially for a rookie. 66 games. He scored 27 goals, 64 points, plus four on a Canucks team that is not going to make the playoffs. Nine power play goals, 20 power play points. Those are nice numbers. Seven game winners, a shooting percentage just over 20%. You can easily make the argument he is the Rookie of the Year. However, I want to talk about Jordan Binnington. Because speaking of January, when the new year turned over, I want to say it was January 3rd, if I remember, according to what I looked up, St. Louis was dead last in the National Hockey League. They were the worst team in the NHL. They were sitting at the bottom. A couple of days later, on the 7th, Binnington makes his first start. In 26 starts, he's gone 21-4. And he's gotten over, he's got, so 21 wins, 4 losses. He's got an overtime loss in there. I don't know why they still have the tie column there. That drives me a little crazy. But his goals against is ridiculous. It's a 1.80. His save percentage is really good. It's a 930. He's got 5 shutouts in half a year of hockey. I would argue that Jordan Binnington is the Rookie of the Year, despite the fact that he's played only half the season. Those numbers are why St. Louis is sitting in a playoff spot today. And indeed, if St. Louis, as they will, finish in a playoff spot, I know we've already handed out the Hart Trophy, and I don't think he's going to work his way into Vezina consideration either, but I would like to hear his name at least mentioned when talking about those, because without Jordan Binnington, the Blues are not there where they are right now. And to me, that's what a Hart Trophy candidate is. Now, I feel like that's already been decided, but you know, Jay, I'm interested to get your thoughts.
Without a doubt, he has changed the course of the Western Conference. He's changed St. Louis and who St. Louis is as a team. I have a tough time handing someone a full season award for half a season's worth of work. When you talk about Rookie of the Year, you know, so many first year players have ups and downs in their game. You know, so yes, Binnington definitely deserves strong conversation for that. When you talk about the best goalie over the full season, when you talk about the best player over the full season, it's really tough for me to give that to someone who is going to wind up playing less than half of his team's game. I mean, that's just philosophically, like, I've got a tough time saying, you know, you're the best player in the league, even though, I mean, what, he's got 28 games played, 26 starts, so what's he going to finish with, 30 start? I mean, that's a low number to say you are the best player in the league.
And now, Jay, that's an interesting argument too. So what does that mean to you? Does it mean you're the best statistical player in the league, or are you the most valuable player to your team or league-wide? Like, how do you determine that? That's yet another thing, because statistically, I think, you know, Nikita Kucherov, there's nobody who could touch him. But you know, would Tampa Bay still be in first place without him this year? I'd argue they're still a pretty good team without him. They're still in the playoffs. My argument is, without Binnington, the Blues don't have a sniff.
I mean, you can make some of that argument, but, you know, you're talking who's the best player in the league? You're talking who is the best goaltender in the league? You know, when you're asking the Vezina, you know, who is the best goaltender in the league? And I mean, it's really difficult for me to say someone who has played, who will end up having played about half as many games as other elite candidates, you know, all of a sudden becomes the guy you look at. I mean, take a look at stats around the league, and I mean, as strong a numbers as Binnington has, you've got other goalies who have done similar, but have played 45, 50 games. I mean, look at Andrei Vasilevskiy's numbers. I mean, 2.36, 9.27 save percentage on a team that's built much more for offense than for defense. I mean, you know, you look at Ben Bishop. I mean, without a healthy Ben Bishop, is Dallas anywhere close to where it is? I mean, he's got a 2.03 goals against and a 9.33 save percentage. You know, so definitely when it comes to the Vezina, I think it's open and shut that, hey, great half season, kid. You know, you've changed the way St. Louis has played. You've changed their fortunes, but sorry, just not enough of a resume to get in the top three. When you talk MVP, I mean, I guess if you want to make the case that most valuable isn't always the best player in the league, you can start to maybe make a case for him that way. But again, I just don't know that he's played enough to fully be able to work his way into that conversation for this year.
And again, I have no problem even with Rookie of the Year. If you're going to say Pettersson's my guy, that's where your vote goes. Okay, fine, because he has had a great year. I just think we need to talk about Binnington. And look, for the Vezina conversation, again, I would like to hear him mentioned. But as you mentioned, Ben Bishop started 44 games. He's won 26 of them, a goals against around 2, a save percentage over 930. Both Robin Lehner and Thomas Greiss in the island have great numbers, so they've had a very good season. I mean, you know, statistically, you could even talk about Jaro Halak and Vasilevsky's hard to ignore, but Tampa Bay is just a runaway train. I at least want to hear his name mentioned when it comes down the stretch here for what St. Louis has done. Now, here's the thing about St. Louis. I always like St. Louis historically has been a little bit tougher, a little bit grindier type of team, which is something I favor in the playoffs. It's hard to sustain, but if you can sustain that style, I think that is a winning style in the playoffs because you just wear other teams out. That said, Jay, I'm looking at the top eight, and almost every one of them, bullet point number one, if not 1A to a 1B, is goaltending. That's how important this position is, I think, to your survival. I mean, everybody, Winnipeg, Nashville, St. Louis, Calgary, San Jose, Vegas, top three in both divisions, and then Dallas, Colorado. Colorado's really the only team there where I might kind of shrug at goaltending because I feel like Colorado kind of needs to outslug you most of the time.
Goaltending, I mean, yeah, without a doubt, you know, some playoffs, you need quality goaltending. Not going to win without it. That's what makes Ben Bishop's injury last night very interesting to keep an eye on and see how serious that is. Bishop has been injured a little bit here down the stretch a couple times this year. He's had to miss some shorter stretches. Anton Khudobin has given them real quality goaltending in short bursts. But I mean, if you're telling me come playoff time, it's Anton Khudobin having to open and carry the load for Dallas, then I don't like their chances of getting out of the first round. If it's Ben Bishop, you know, and you look at the firepower that they've got up front, you know, with some of the explosive offensive guys there who can take over a game or two, with Ben Bishop being able to steal a game or two on the back end, boy, Dallas becomes a very trendy upset pick. You know, Vegas is another team. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury how healthy is he going to be, and what Marc-Andre Fleury are you going to get? Are you going to get the one who showed up in the playoffs last year, or are you going to get the one who showed up for 4 or 5 years before that with Pittsburgh and was a liability? If Vegas doesn't get quality goaltending from Fleury, I don't see how they would knock off San Jose in a first round series, and that's what it's looking like. It's looking like it's going to be Vegas San Jose, and I don't see how they get out of that round unless you've got a healthy and informed Marc-Andre Fleury.
You know, and I will say this though, I feel like going to Vegas has rejuvenated Marc-Andre Fleury, not just his career but personally. I just think his time was done with Pittsburgh, and the way things finished there was not great for him. You know, with the injury situations and the fans turned on him. And honestly, I think it's been really just blown new life into his sails, and the ship, when it's fully powered, meaning he's not hurt, he's one of the best guys in the West. So I see no reason for that not to be the case again in the playoffs, because he's one of those guys who does turn it up a notch in the postseason. But, and Jay, nobody knows for sure except him. Is he really injured? Is he hurt? And there's a difference. Or will he be healthy going in?
Yeah, I mean, so that's one big thing that we'll need to take a look at over the final couple weekends of the regular season. You know, I think, you know, as you mentioned goaltending, a 1B to goaltending, though, is defensive zone play. So much of the league is predicated on D zone play, even heading into offense. I mean, offense, if you chart scoring chances during a game, look at how many scoring chances come off the rush. You only get those scoring chances if you win your battles in the defensive zone, if you make the good outlet pass, so you're able to get into transition cleanly with speed. So defensive zone play, not just keeping the puck out, but being able to win battles and get into your transition offense, so huge when it comes into the playoffs. So that's a 1B to me to goaltending play. You know, how well are teams playing in the defensive zone? Knowing locally here in Nashville, D-zone play was huge during the Preds' run to the Stanley Cup Finals 2 years ago. Pretty much the two seasons since then, Nashville has been a very underwhelming team with its defensive zone play. You've got big name players, but the performance in the defensive zone has not matched the name on the back of the jersey in many cases. So that's something that, you know, that I think you're going to need to take a look at here once you wipe the records clean and start at a 0-0 series record. Who plays well in the defensive zone, and, you know, how do they protect their goaltending, and how do they use the defensive zone to jumpstart transition play?
It is always fun to talk hockey here on Talking Puck. And so that is Jay Levin. You can follow him at Bowtie Sports. I'm Tom Callahan at Callahan on Air. Follow us over on Twitter if you would, please. We'd appreciate it. Check out the blog at talkingpuck.com. Leave your comments there. Do you agree with us? Do you disagree with anything we've said here on the podcast? Feel free to chime in. And Jay and I will be coming back at you soon. Jay, as always, it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. And you know what? I cannot wait. This is going to be a great 5 or 6 game stretch, the run to the end of the regular season.
I'm really excited to see how things play out. You know, most seasons, Tom, we're looking at that final weekend to determine the last playoff team or two. I'm not sure that we're going to get that tight of a finish this year. This weekend, though, I think it is a huge weekend to watch and kind of see. I think a lot will be shaped in the next 3-4 days. So look forward to catching up with you early next week, and we'll do it again.
All right, everybody. That's Talking Puck for now. We will talk to you again soon. Thanks for listening.